Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got a wonderful way to start off the week. We've got a great guest, Jan Denise, and we're going to be talking about innately good, dispelling the myth that you're not. A little bit odd in thinking, well, I don't believe so. I want to welcome to the Donna Sebo Show, Jan Denise. Hello, Jan.
Hi, Donna, and thank you very much.
Now, you have been involved with writing. You're a syndicated journalist. You speak all over the country, and you have published some other material. With this book, Innately Good, why is it important for you to dispel the myth? But first, my listeners are going to say, dispel a myth? What myth are we dispelling? Why don't you illuminate us and give us a little bit of your personal journey that brought you to this particular level of understanding.
Okay. The myth that we're dispelling is the myth that you're not good enough. Feelings of inferiority are universal. We're biologically programmed to be sensitive to rejection. And then we're born to caretakers who have their own insecurities, and they teach us to stifle our feelings and parts of our personality, parts of who we are, in order to win acceptance and approval. And then we have on top of that religion that reinforces the notion that we're somehow innately flawed or born in sin. And, of course, the media parades the perfect buttocks and lips and eyes in front of us, and we're left trying to measure up.
Well, I'll tell you something. I have to share it with you. I don't know what station it was on, but I was flipping, channel surfing, I guess is what it was used to be called. I think it's still that. But anyway, I was going through all these different stations, and here was this huge contest of extremely good-looking young men and young women. And your comment about media establishing precedent, here are these fabulously built young men and women. Not a one was over the age of 24. And they're all in competition for who's got the best butt with the males and who's got the best butt with the females. And I thought, here we've got all of this rah, rah, rah. And I understand it, and I realize it's a visual. But I thought, isn't that interesting? I look at all of them, and I just think they're all incredibly wonderful. Yet there will be some kind of a label. And my goodness, look at what happened historically in the fashion industry going a few years back in the 60s with Twiggy. I mean, she was as anorexic as anybody could be. And the reason I'm focusing on the physical is because in this country, men, but more women, are so concerned that they don't measure up. And it's so hard to get past that. So
it is. As women, we tend to find our worth in how desirable men find us.
And there is this myth about the looks. And what is so interesting is that often when you're talking with men and you'll say, well, what is it? And they'll say, oh, yeah, she really looks foxy. But when you really talk with someone who wants somebody as a partner in their life, they always enjoy somebody attractive. Don't get me wrong. Male, female, that's just the way it is. They like you like to smell good and this type of thing. But the key is often the one that they will choose as a partner isn't necessarily the most beautiful woman or whatever. It is the quality and character of who they are. Now, I'm not saying there aren't those that don't do the other. But when you...
Well, the fact is that the quality and the character make us more attractive physically to somebody else. And, you know, when we let what's inside shine through, we are literally more physically attractive. You know, I think that my husband's, you know, my best quality in his eyes are sparkling eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my eyes sparkle because of what's inside. You know, they sparkle because I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and what makes somebody most attractive, and you can see this in movie stars, you know, celebrities, you know, you can look and see that they don't all have perfect buttocks or mm-hmm. perfect eyes or perfect full lips, but they at least appear to be comfortable in their own skin. And that makes somebody incredibly attractive. If you learn to love who you are, then you also learn to be comfortable in your own skin. And when you are incredibly attractive to the opposite sex. You're mm-hmm. incredibly attractive to everybody.
Right, because you just walk into a room and you light it up. It's just there, and people go, wow, who is this person? I want to know this person. They've got something right. I want to have. And you have so many good quotes in your book where you say, to be a human being means to possess a feeling of inferiority which constantly presses towards its own conquest. The greater the feeling of inferiority that has been experienced, the more powerful is the urge for conquest and the more violent the emotional agitation. Now, that quote was made by Alfred Adler.
Adler, right.
And you talk in this particular chapter about where the lie came from and why we bought it, and you talked about yourself, how you, this girl, Gail Reese. Tell us your story.
Well, I think the story you're talking about is when I was in first grade, I went to school one day, it was picture day, and of course I was trying to look pretty. I had little brown ringlets in my hair and a pink dress on, and went to school that day, and I was standing behind the tallest girl in first grade. And I remember her turning around and telling me that my pink dress was ugly. And I was one of the shortest girls in first grade, and I was too shy to say anything. But I went home and cried to my mom and said, you know, she said my dress was ugly. And I remember my mom saying, it's a pretty little dress, honey. Maybe she was just jealous.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? At 6 years old, I had already learned way too well. My mom had taught me to worry about what everybody else was thinking.
Yes,
whether
she
intended mm-hmm. to teach me that or not, she did. So I couldn't just dismiss what she thought of my dress. I went on, and this is what we all do, trying to be pretty enough, smart enough, nice enough that other people would like me and accept me. I didn't want to be rejected. None of us want to be rejected. You know, it's called survival. There was a time in our history when, without any scary claws or teeth, the protection of the tribe meant survival.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when we were rejected, like that's an ugly dress, we had to respond immediately and correct what was wrong. And so that's why it can feel so threatening to us when somebody rejects us.
That's
we
true.
Personalize it.
You have a wonderful story in here about a friend of yours named Pam and her mother's attitude about her glasses, and you said she never took her glasses off. Explain that a little bit.
Well, somebody that I was consulting, I do individual and couples consulting, and what she realized during the course of our meeting was that when she was a little girl, only 2 or 3 years old, she had to wear corrective lenses. She had glasses on. And her mother taught her that, you know, she had to stay right there next to her. She said, stay right here, because if you wander off and get lost and you take your glasses off, you won't be able to find your way back to me. So she felt as though she had to cling to those glasses, make sure that they kept them on, didn't break them, didn't lose them, didn't take them off. And she also felt like she had to stay right there next to her mother. And as an adult, when I met with her the first time, she was probably close to 40, and she realized that she still had the glasses on,
mm-hmm.
that she was still looking at life through her mother's eyes, that she had been afraid to wander too far away from what she'd been taught to what her mother's beliefs were, to, you know, her mother's view, her mother's judgment, and she was still wearing the glasses. But, of course, with that realization comes freedom, because she also realized that she could take the glasses off, that she could
mm-hmm.
be her own person, that she didn't have to continue to worry about where her mother was and what her mother thought and whether or not she had her mother's love.
these are subtle things. And so many of us, it takes us years to be able to get past certain things. And you bring out about how we need to question. Now, children naturally do this, especially as soon as they start talking. Why? Of course, they know they're pushing your buttons because this is a very simple thing that could go on in infinitum. But the reality is that so often in social environments, I don't care whether it has a religious training to it, social context, cultural, whatever terminology you want to use, there often is this do not question. And I know that was one of the biggest hurdles that I had to overcome. And I have to be very consciously present with that because that was pounded into me. You don't ask questions. You never question anybody in authority. It is just a phenomenal thing, and maybe some of my listeners can relate to this, I don't know, but I'm just sharing something about my own experience that I have had to grow through. And even to this day, I find myself flipping into that old kind of program, you don't necessarily need to ask a question, and then I have to say, well, wait a minute, maybe it is time to ask a question. Let's ask questions here. So this is something that really you have to be consciously present with, because there's that subliminal stuff that just keeps playing and playing and playing.
Right. On some level, we all grow up feeling as though we're not quite good enough, that we don't measure up, that there's something wrong with us. And it's because we're literally programmed or indoctrinated by our caretakers and those people in authority who teach us, perhaps, that, you know, why? Because I said so. Or no, that's bad, don't do that, or that's evil, or that's dirty, or that's shameful, or, you know, maybe they hold their finger out and do the shame on you thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't just learn that our behavior is bad or that what we would do naturally is wrong, because we're too little to make a distinction between ourselves and our behavior. So we grow up feeling as though there's something innately wrong with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we set out to prove our worth. And how do we do that? Society teaches us to do that in terms of what can be quantified, money or good looks or accomplishment, education. You know, for some people it might be sex or desirability, might be how well you can throw a football or how big your muscles are. But we all grow up feeling as though there's something we have to do, some criteria we have to meet in order to be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that, you know, no matter whether you succeed or you don't, you still don't feel good about yourself, because you can't get thin enough. Anorexia is a perfect example of how you can't get thin enough when what you're really trying to do is get good enough.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely
true. And you can't get rich enough when what you're trying to do is get good enough. You know, you can't get beautiful enough when what you're really trying to do is prove your worth. You can't. And that's why we run into dead ends. That's why we keep moving the finish line. You know, we think that if I could just get one more promotion, or if I could live in that neighborhood, or if he would love me, then I'd know I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
It's never enough. Our egos are insatiable. And we have to keep moving the finish line until we look inside and find what really makes us worthwhile. And it has nothing to do with the external. It's our innate goodness. And that's why, to answer the question you asked earlier, Donna, that's why it was so important for me to write the book. Because I want people to know that they're innately good. Not that they can be or that they will be when they meet certain criteria, but that they are innately good, innately loved.
Henry David Thoreau, you have a quote which I'm sure many of my listeners are familiar with. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. Just yesterday I was having a meeting with some people, and two of the ladies that I was meeting with, exceptionally talented women, and both were in environments that are sort of constrictive. They're working for a very large corporation. Each of them is so significantly talented. It's absolutely wonderful. And they're just such a joy to be around because they're outside of the box. And sometimes it's a challenge for them because they're in jobs that
they have to fulfill certain requirements, and yet there is this tremendous need that they have to express their uniqueness and their brilliance. Mm-hmm. And it's something they need to know that they can do it. They need to find their own modalities that they can operate within. And so they have. They've managed to find a little bit of this or a little bit of that. But
right.
it's such a joy.
It's a wonderful, wonderful example because you can be you better than you can be anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm trying to dance to somebody else's music, I don't move freely. It doesn't flow. It's not magical. But when I can reconnect with my own music, that music that I lost as a child growing up because I was stifled, you know,
mm-hmm.
if I can reconnect with my own music, then I can dance. I am liberated. And when you see me dancing, it's like seeing the two women that you're talking about. They're moving to their own music, and there's something incredibly beautiful about that. You know, when I can connect with my music, I'm also connecting with love, the creative force, the universe, God, whatever label you care to put on it. When you hear your music and you move to it, you're really being true to yourself. You're aligning your behavior and your choices with your essence. You can think of your essence as the music. And when you start to move to your own music, you're aligning your behavior with your essence. And that means you're aligning with love. Because at a core level, you are love. You have a spark of divinity in there. And you know, the only way for us to get self-esteem, Donna, is to do exactly that. Align our behavior and our choices with our values or our essence. That's the only way for us to feel good about ourselves, is to be true to ourselves. You know, it doesn't matter where your kids go to school or what kind of mansion you live in. If you got there because you married somebody for money, for example, you're going to be miserable. You're not going to be happy because you didn't align your choices with your values.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way to be happy. That's the only way to be at peace and feel good about yourself. So when you see these two women dancing to their own music, that's what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Two people who are true to themselves.
And it's a joy. I loved this short story that you had in your book. You said during the Tang Dynasty, it said that there was a Chinese prime minister who was visiting the temple, and although he considered himself a very devout and humble Buddhist, he asked the master of the temple to explain the Buddha's perspective on egotism. And the master answered in a condescending tone, "What kind of a stupid question is that?" The prime minister was outraged, and he responded with, "How dare you speak to me in that manner?" And he shouted this at the Buddhist priest, and the master said, with a very, very quiet expression on his face, "That, Your Excellency, is egotism." And I thought, that is such a good story. And you can adapt that to any perspective.
I usually tell it in the first person because we visited China. So I say, you know, when we went to China, my husband and I. But, yeah, it's a good story. And, you know, when you give somebody a live example like that, they can relate, you know, because we've all felt indignant. We've all felt like, how dare you? Don't you know how important my time is? Or don't you realize that I'm important, too? Or that, you know, hey, I'm a person, too. And when we feel that indignation, it's because, it's not because of what somebody else did or what somebody else said. It's because, on some level, we don't feel good enough. And so when we feel that indignation or we feel anger or we get frustrated or upset or jealous, it's never about somebody else. It's because on some level we don't really, really know who we are yet. So when you know about your innate goodness, when you really, really learn to know and love and be who you are, you're free. You don't ever have to get angry or upset again. You don't have to be jealous. You don't have to be indignant because you know who you are, whether anybody else does or not.
Absolutely true. And there was a lesson I learned when I was younger that about jealousy, and that was that jealousy was nothing more than fear. It's a feeling of inadequacy that just as you said a moment ago, you don't feel worthy, so you become, as the old depiction is, a green-eyed monster, and you wonder what's wrong. Why is it that this is pushing my button? It's pushing the button because you're afraid. If you are interested in something, or maybe you've been going after a promotion and somebody else gets it and you say, I should have had it instead of him or her. I mean, men and women both go through this. This isn't a gender exclusive. And
no.
It's only when you can have that harmony within you, say, yeah, okay, this one didn't work. That's all right. I got something else I'll be looking at. And you move
right.
on.
Right. You don't personalize somebody else's preferences.
Mm-hmm. That's a
you
very
know,
good sentence. You don't personalize someone else's preferences. That is an excellent statement.
Right. We get so much of that in romantic relationships. You know, rejection feels like it just feels devastating sometimes. Why? It's not because we lost the perfect partner. It's because we feel like we weren't good enough. What was wrong with me? Why didn't he want me?
Mm-hmm.
So when you know who you are, you know, what you said about fear, Donna, is so, so true. All of our negative emotion and all of our fears, any fear, can be traced to the mother of all fears, that we're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any negative emotion, people listening, you have any, you know, fears, you think you're afraid of losing your job, or you think you're afraid of, you know, somebody else getting the promotion, like you said, it's not really about that. You're not afraid, you're not stressed out because of the economy or because you might lose your job or because your husband might find somebody else. You're stressed out because on some level, you don't really, really know who you are yet. And I guarantee you that when you still yourself, when you get still and you look inside at that divine spark and you really, really know who you are, you won't be afraid anymore. You invalidate the mother of all fears that you're not good enough because you absolutely, unequivocally are good enough just the way you are. You're perfect. You are at a core level love, and love is everything good. It's
true.
Enough of anything you could possibly need or want.
Something that I think is very significant in today's world, we have a lot of conflicts. We have many areas of the world where men and women are literally imprisoned by certain cultural, whatever, theocracies, dictatorships, etc. You have a paragraph in your book that I really liked. And I'm going to read it verbatim. Take away choice, and what you have left is only blind obedience. And that's different from obedience by choice, different from goodness, and therefore different from love. Take away choice, and there is no love. So many people are locked into a feeling they have no choice. And when they adopt that, then they are going to drown. It is so important recognize that little word, choice, we've got to keep it in the front of our minds because we do have choices.
So true, Donna. We're continually choosing between love and fear. And it doesn't matter how many times we fall on our butt or how many times we choose to come from fear and get aggravated and lose it. We always get to choose again.
Mm-hmm.
And we can choose love. See, it's just what you said, when you take away choice, then you feel like you can't make a difference. You can't really choose to be who you are. You feel like it's hopeless. But you always do have choice. And when you exercise choice and you choose to align with love, you choose to be true to your essence, to your values, you absolutely are going to feel good about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just knowing that you're good enough. It's actually aligning with that goodness, because when I begin to align with my goodness, I'm empowered.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just know intellectually that I'm good. I feel good. You know, I feel like I can fly. I feel like I can do anything because I'm aligning with love. I'm giving legs and a voice and arms and hands to love, to goodness.
A point that you bring out in your book also is that we don't have to be afraid of the truth, and it's always our friend. It does not lead us in the wrong direction. It cannot. In fact, And sometimes feedback, if we ask for feedback, if we're questioning, if we get feedback, if we don't take it personally, if we can look at it and say, okay, maybe puce green really doesn't look good on me. What else do I need to know? We have to learn. Nobody's exempt from the learning curve. And you say you don't have to worry about where the feedback is coming from. Take a positioning of choice and use it for good. How are you going to be able to utilize the comments and criticisms? Being discretionary about yourself and your life should be empowering. And when we take it personally in the wrong way, or we say, gee whiz, someone criticized what I had, it's, you know, it really hurts my feelings and blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm going to say, get over it. Look at it. Is it a valid criticism? If something's pushed your button, then evaluate it. If it is something
yeah.
that you go, you know what, that had to be the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You just go, excuse me, and maybe go back to the person and say, I'd really like to know why you made that comment. You just never know. Sometimes people have bad hair days, and they don't know what else to do with their minds or their mouths but flap. And
yeah, don't personalize their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a grain of truth in there, if there's something you can learn from it, wow, learn from it. You know, maybe they did say it in a hateful way. Maybe they did say it because they were having a bad hair day. But if there's a grain of truth in there that can help you, take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't personalize it. Don't let it upset your day. But learn something from it.
Oh, I agree. I think a good example is the American Idol competitions and this type of thing, when they'll make judgments about certain things. And here we are in the, as an audience maybe watching it and going, I don't agree with that. Okay, fine. That person that is there, they are in a position of personal empowerment if they accept that opportunity and say, okay, maybe I wasn't up to par. Maybe I if I was a singer, maybe I was flat. If I was a dancer, maybe I missed some steps. Wow, I have this opportunity. Where can I take it from here? There's always something that you can learn from every situation, but it's that wonderful word of choice. Are you going to use it as leverage? Or are you going to use it as something and say, well, I'm just going to stay here because obviously I cannot choose to do otherwise. It really takes guts to live in this life, and it's not something you do by sitting on your brain hands or your body hands. You have to get up and move. You have to really take on that responsibility of finding out about the glory that is inside of you. And we have a quote in here in your book, the golden opportunity you're seeking is in yourself. It's not in your environment. It's not in luck or chance or the help of others. It's in yourself alone. O.S. Martin, the founder of Success Magazine. Now, I know we're coming to a close, Jan. You've got a lot of powerful stuff in your book. I think that if anyone listening had a young adult in their home that they wanted to help them get through some impasses they're going through, maybe go through a chapter of this book at a time. Or if you've got a friend that just can't seem to get their act together because they're carrying around a lot of garbage. Jan Denise's book, Innately Good, Dispelling the Myth That You're Not, is, I think, worthy of being a gift to that friend. And maybe you want to have a reading club or something like that. Jan, you have a website that people can go to find out more about you. What is that website?
www.innatelygood.com.
Innatelygood.com. INNATELYGOOD.com. You'll find all kinds of good information on our website. Jan, we have got about 45 seconds before we're going to be closing our conversation. Is there a thought that you'd like to share with my listeners?
Anytime you feel a negative, self-defeating emotion, anytime you question whether you're good enough, whether you're normal, whether there's something wrong with you, remember that at a core level, you are love. You have a divine spark in there, and it's enough of whatever you could possibly need or want. And anytime you feel like less than love or like you don't measure up, it's not because you don't measure up. It's just because you're afraid. And the mother of all fears is that you're not good enough. That's a lie. That's the myth that we want to dispel. Because you are absolutely unequivocally good enough. In fact, you are as perfect now as you were the day that you were born and you were that pristine, perfect little baby. And when the little baby was learning to walk, he stumbled. He fell down. And when you stumble and fall down, just like that little baby is still perfect, you are still perfect. It's how you learn. It's how you grow.
Jen, it's been a delight having you as a guest today. Don't forget, go to her website, innatelygood.com. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you so much, Donna.
You are welcome, Jan. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a call where I light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here is the toll-free worldwide number, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Don't forget, I just need your first name or initial. I love to know where you're calling in from. Sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask a question about anything that you're interested in. I also want to mention that if you have had a unique paranormal experience, encountered a ghost, out of body, whatever it might be, I'm putting together a book, and for this next year I'm wanting to collect about 100 stories to put into this book, and then it will be published, and I'm looking forward to having your stories included in this publication. So if you want to be in touch with me, send me an email. I'll need your contact information because the publishing house will require that. And then send it to my email, which is donna@delphiinternational.com. And be sure to put in the subject line, the Donna Sebo Show psychic story or paranormal story, something like that where I can read the highlight, because I have literally hundreds of emails that I have to go through every week. So this is a very good way to do it, and that way I'll be able to note that that is what it's relating to very quickly. Also, you could send it to me via regular mail, snail mail,
to the Donna Sebo Show, and that is P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. So however you want to do it, I'd love to hear from you, and you will have the opportunity to be in the book, and of course you would be notified should that be chosen, should your story be chosen. So we're looking at collecting 100. Also, it looks like things are changing regarding travel schedule. We've got the Pacific Northwest Women's Show that's coming up at the end of the March. And so I am going to be changing my travel time. For those of you who are listening in Alaska, I'm going to be moving it down the road a little bit to the month of April. So I'll be putting all of that information in my newsletter. For those of you who are listening in the state of Washington, I'm also looking for volunteers that would like to assist at my booth. So you can call me at my office, which is 800-872-8852. And again, all of this information that I'm sharing with you right now is going to be repeated in my newsletter. And if you don't get my newsletter, you can always go to my website, which is Donna@DelphiInternational.com is my email. But just go to DelphiInternational.com and you will get to the newsletter section. You'll see all the contact information and everything that you need. So I needed to let you know about that. Also, tomorrow, we are going to be talking about a Hollywood star. And this is a woman that, wow, when I read her biography, I was just absolutely amazed. It is the life, loves, and enduring faith of a Hollywood legend, forever young, Loretta Young. This woman was phenomenal in what she accomplished during a time in media and in Hollywood that a woman should never, ever have been able to accomplish what she did. She was gorgeous. She was always the elegant lady. So we're going to be talking about her tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Nick Redfern. We're going to be talking about contactees. This is a fascinating subject, and these are stories that I think you're going to find very, very interesting. Gail Gregory is going to be with us on Thursday. We're going to be talking about the workplace evolution, and this is important because for those of you who are working and maybe you're out of a job and you're wanting to say, how do I fit in this new modality that's evolving in the working marketplace, Gail has some good insights. And then we're going to be talking about children on Friday, the power of your child's imagination. And, of course, my newsletter will be coming out shortly, and that is going to give you all the people that are coming up in the month of February. We have got a powerful lineup of individuals, and it's always a delight to share the knowledge and experience that these people have with you, the audience, so that your life can be empowered in ways that you had never, ever expected. I also wanted to share something with you that I had received, and if I have enough, yeah, let me do it right now, because this came from PJ. She said, can giving make you happier? Or this was a question she posed. And of course, it has been demonstrated time and time again that when we do share, when we do work towards helping people or situations improve, it makes us feel better. We really do. Well, there is a poll that was done by Time Magazine. It was called their Happiness Poll. And they found that 75% of respondents in the poll named contributing to the lives of others as a major source of happiness. A 2008 study published in Science concluded that spending money on others promotes happiness, and a 2006 study in the Journal of Happiness said that acts of kindness make someone happier, the giver very much happier. And there is a gentleman by the name of Freeman Michaels. He's a former soap star and also is now known as a life coach and an author. He said, people work on changing their diet, exercise, and lifestyle habits to achieve well-being. But he said they forget too many times to add in the critical element that really brings happiness to the individual, and that is giving. And that is one thing that I feel whenever there's been phenomenal disasters, whether it was the tsunami a few years ago, the situation in Haiti, when I saw the scenes of physicians with, there was one location that they had set up as a hospital, they had two tables, and they were having to operate just like the Civil War. And the reporter was saying it was just like a Civil War enactment. You have screaming people because there's no anesthetic. There was nothing. And finally, they had been able to get some local anesthetic to assist them. And they're having to because of gangrene and of these horrific situations due to the fact that they're in the tropics and disease and gangrene and from injury can just, you know, compound in phenomenal ways. And that just burned itself into my mind. He said, here they're doing everything they can. And he named some phenomenal number of people that were waiting for surgery to save their lives. They had to cut off their limbs or their hands or, you know, it was something that you would just think is, it's a nightmare. It just doesn't seem like it's happening, but it is. And here are all of these people that have flown in. Nobody's paying their costs, nothing. They're doing it because they want to be there. They want to help these people have a chance to survive. And it still goes on. And you have this expression, this generosity on the part of so many people. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So whenever you're in a situation that someone is telling you that the world is filled with a bunch of crappy people and there's all of this garbage going on, pay attention to those people that dedicate their time, effort, and energy to maybe teaching a child how to read that they're doing at a local library, or maybe teaching adults who are illiterate how to read, or teaching someone how to speak the English language, or you've got someone that's volunteering in hospitals, or someone like a relative of mine who's in his 80s, and he deals with widows of vets, helping them fill out the government forms that are necessary so that they can get the benefits during some of the most difficult times that they could ever experience in their life. People that are volunteering to go to different points in the globe to be able to contribute because they feel that it's important for them to do that. Never, ever feel that life is not worth living and that there are not wonderful people out there. They may not be pounding a drum. They may not be blowing a trumpet. They're just out there. They just do it. And you have people like this in your community. They're in your grocery stores. They are everywhere. They're in your police departments. Good human beings that really care. And they're doing the best they can with what they've got. And often they give more than what they can afford to give. Whoever you are, wherever you are, don't lose the faith. It is so easy when you have stuff that is being thrown at you over and over and over and over again, where you buy into the inadequacies, the horrific things that sometimes human beings can do to others, and you say, gee, that's just the way it is. No, it is not the way it is. When we as human beings, as individuals, recognize the good within ourselves, and say, I can do something in my own way. I know of a lady that's having a tough time physically and financially, but she said, I adopted a child. She's donating. She found out about an organization she's very supportive of, and she said, I can't tell you how much joy that brings me when I get that little note from that child every month. And she's been roundly criticized, but she said, it brings me joy. So whatever it is that you love to be a part of and that you love to do, realize you make a difference. Turn on your light. Be proud of who you are. Be willing to work with your strengths. And just know that when you shine, someone may come up to you and say, I want to know how you turned that light on inside yourself. Can you help me find my switch? And you may be able to do that for them. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Telephone lines are open, 888-815-9756. When we come back, I've got a recipe for some lemony pork chops that I think that you'll like. Also, a wonderful, wonderful story about a great gal by the name of Tamara who said, do it afraid, the courage will come later. I'll tell you her story in just a bit. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. If you'd like to chat with me, 888-815-9756.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Okay, have you got that pad of paper handy and a pen? I really enjoy pork. Pork is one of my favorite meats. And this is called Lemony Pork Melanese. Now, this really is so flavorful, and it's light. I don't know about you, but since the holidays passed, it's like I really want flavorful food, but I don't want anything real heavy because I'm really wanting to tone up and trim down a full dress size. And, of course, eating chocolate cake and, you know, the goodies doesn't help much. So now that we're past all of that temptation cycle, I said, okay, what can I find that's really going to, you know, tantalize and tickle the taste buds and not have a whole bunch of calories to it? Well, this is really great. This is so easy to make, and this is something that you can use for a salad. So I'm just going to give it out here. You're going to need one whole lemon. You're going to need a tablespoon of Dijon mustard, You need half a teaspoon of pepper, quarter of a teaspoon of salt, and a quarter of a teaspoon of sugar. And if you don't want sugar, use stevia. A quarter of a cup plus 2 tablespoons of olive oil. One and a quarter cups of panko breadcrumbs. And if you are allergic to wheat, there are different things that you could use, like maybe rice crumbs of some kind. I mean, just use your imagination, being, you know, ingenious about what you'd come up with, but the equivalent of what breadcrumbs would offer. And you need 3/4 cup of shredded Parmesan cheese, 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh parsley, and then you need 6 pork cutlets. And you have the loin, obviously, and it's going to be about 1.5 pounds, and a cup of flour. And again, if you're not on wheat, just find some other flour substitute. You need 2 eggs beaten up. And then if you'd like to have this along with a salad, how about having 8 cups of baby arugula leaves, which is about 8 ounces, a cup of sliced mushrooms, a couple of ounces of that, a half a cup of half grape tomatoes, and maybe some lemon slices for garnish. So let's get to the cooking phase. You're going to want to preheat an oven to 350 degrees. And you want to grate from your lemon 1 teaspoon of zest and squeeze 2 tablespoons of juice from your lemon. And in your large bowl, you want to whisk together your lemon juice, your mustard, your zest, your salt, pepper, and your sugar.
And then you want to slowly whisk in your quarter cup of olive oil. If you want, don't want to whisk, use a blender, whatever works for you, and then put that to the side. And then in another bowl, a shallow bowl or pan, you want to take your breadcrumbs, your parmesan, your parsley, and whatever you know, a little bit of pepper, and you want to dip your pork in your flour, the eggs, and then the crumb. Flour, eggs, and then the crumb mixture. And you put it in a hot skillet. If you want, use your nonstick cooking spray, or maybe just add about a tablespoon or 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Over medium-high heat, you add your pork in batches and cook until they're nice and golden brown, about a minute per side. And then you put them in an ungreased baking sheet, and you bake them until they're no longer pink in the center, about 4 to 5 minutes. Now remember, again, that oven is about 350 degrees. Then you put it on the platter, you sprinkle it with a little bit of the zest, and then if you want the salad, you got the salad right there. You just take your arugula, your mushrooms and tomatoes, add it to the dressing, toss it, and serve everything right with the pork. And use lemon as a garnish. Light, delicious, and there's another way that you could fix this. If you didn't want the breadcrumbs, if you wanted to use something else, you still would need to dip, have a flour of some kind, and what that does, that forms like the crust, and then your Parmesan cheese, you dip it in your flour, your eggs, and you could also use a coating, if you wanted, of just the Parmesan cheese, if you didn't want to have the breadcrumbs. So there's a lot of ways that you could manipulate this, and I think that it is flavorful. The lemon just goes beautifully with the pork. And it's something that I know it would be a delight for guests to serve. And you would have a wonderful feeling saying you have got your taste buds satisfied because of good flavors. All right, and I wanted to share with you, and again, the phone number to call in if you'd like to chat with me is 888-815-9756. Tamara was a woman who wanted to go back to school. And she just was scared to death. Now, once she had graduated from high school, like so many young people, she ends up getting married right out of school, and she just deeply regretted that she had not completed college. She had a wonderful family. She had 5 children, a fabulous husband, and she said, you know what? We have spent so much time in our lives taking care of children. She absolutely has a passion for children. For 15 years, she and her husband took in 51 children. A lot of these children have been addicted to drugs because of mothers that had bad habits. And there were children with feeding tubes, or maybe they were developmentally disabled. And she said she just loved doing this, and her husband did too. So here it is, her own family grows up, and she realizes after 25 years that she has a big wake-up call. What is that wake-up call? Her husband left her. He left her with the home that they had lived in for 25 years, but absolutely no support, and she was just totally devastated. They had started growing apart, but she said still the way he did it, it just blew her away. She said, I had no job. I had nothing to put on my resume. She had to do something. So she did what she had always done, and that was take care of children. She said, but it was so tough. Now, she really thought she should get a degree in child development. If she did that, even with all of her experience, that degree was going to give her an ace of positioning that she didn't have otherwise. However, when she started looking at the courses that were required, she just said, I don't know that I can do it. But you know, her grandmother said to her, you're setting a great example for your children by going to college. So what she did with her kids, she said, you need to know, I'm going to college and I need your support. Do you know her kids did exactly that? She became a valedictorian of her group. And when she graduated,
Her family filled two rows in the auditorium. She's now teaching at the Navy's Maine Child Development Center in Port Loma. She's taking business courses now because she wants to have her own business. She said the only people who fail are the ones who don't get up and try again. College has been just the beginning for me in my new life. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take charge. You're the one that can make your life as rich as you want it to be. We'll be back here with you tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.